The Bush administration moved toward war in Iraq with little substantial challenge from Washington's foreign policy insiders. Many actively supported the president's desire to unseat Saddam Hussein. Others were persuaded by colleagues and friends in the intelligence community that Iraq posed a real threat to the United States. Kenneth Pollack was among those well-informed, knowledgeable members of the foreign policy establishment. A former CIA analyst and National Security Council staff member, Pollack is now director of research at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. He lent his expertise to supporting the case for war with Iraq in his book, The Threatening Storm, published in 2002. Pollack re-examines the arguments for war in an article in the current Atlantic Monthly magazine, and he joins us in our Washington studios. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me, Leanne.
In your article, you discuss the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, and this was central to the public case for war in Iraq. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, how does this document look now?
Well, I think that given what we now know about where the Iraqi programs on weapons of mass destruction actually stand, clearly the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate exaggerated the threat from Iraq. It was the central premise of that National Intelligence Estimate that Iraq was making significant progress on building weapons of mass destruction, that they were getting close, and by close I mean years, but nevertheless not decades away from having a nuclear weapon, and that if left to its own devices, the Iraqis would be able to construct a nuclear weapon and other very advanced forms of weapons of mass destruction in the not-too-distant future. What we now see, well, now that we've been in Iraq for 10 months, now that we've had a very large exploitation team there led by David Kay, searching around trying to find out exactly what's going on, is that, in fact, Iraq's weapons were not that threatening. The programs were there, but they were much more rudimentary and much less aggressive than we had realized beforehand.
The U.S. intelligence community has pretty much taken it on the chin for this. Does it deserve a bad rap?
Yes and no. Clearly, there were mistakes made, and in my article, I go through the different mistakes that I think that were made. In many cases, I have to say, I think that the mistakes that were made were entirely justifiable.
What mistakes are you talking about? Give an example.
Well, I think that one of the biggest problems that we faced, especially in the latter half of the 1990s and in the run-up to the war itself, basically starting in about 1998, is that the U.S. and the Western community, in fact the entire international community, lost the access that the U.N. inspectors had brought into Iraq. Now, in retrospect, the loss of the inspectors looms much larger than we realized at the time. And I think that one of the mistakes that was made was that there wasn't a more conscious recognition that this was a problem, that we no longer had the inspectors in Iraq, and therefore we had to approach intelligence about Iraq in a completely different fashion than we had while the inspectors were there, and while the inspectors were able to do things that no one else was able to. And I'll give you an example of that. Probably the most important thing that the inspectors did, again, in retrospect, is that whenever a report came in to the United States, to Great Britain, to any country that indicated that the Iraqis were building something at a location or buying something somewhere or hiding something somewhere, that information was typically turned over in one form or another to the inspectors, and the inspectors were asked to go and look. And they would go and they would look. And they could establish some degree of ground truth. They could go to the facility and they could say, you know what, there's something suspicious going on here. Or they'd come back and say, the whole place is empty. There's dust on the floor, you know, a foot thick. Nothing happened here. And that was critical to reassuring people. When the inspectors were gone, that was lost too. You no longer had the ability to vet information from defectors, from satellites, from other indirect sources of information. And as a result, once the inspectors were gone, I don't think that the intelligence analysts adjusted quite properly and began to recognize that they needed to treat these sources with much greater skepticism than they actually did.
You characterize the Bush administration's handling of the intelligence on Iraq as, you don't call it lying, outright lying. You call it creative omission. What do you mean by that?
Probably the best example, and clearly the most important example, was in the realm of nuclear weapons. The intelligence community had a rather nuanced estimate of Iraq's weapons progress. Now, again, it was wrong. It was greatly exaggerated. But the estimate at the time, before the war, was included in the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate, was that if Iraq was able to obtain fissile material from an outside source, they might be able to build a nuclear weapon in as little as a year or two. However, the intelligence community felt that that was highly unlikely. And what they felt was much more likely was that Iraq would have to enrich the uranium itself, and that they believed would take anywhere from 4 to 7 years, a much greater period of time. When Bush administration officials made their case for war, however, what they often did was to simply mention the 1 to 2 year estimate. And if you look at speeches made by senior Bush administration officials, including the president himself, they consistently make this point that Iraq could have nuclear weapons in 1 to 2 years, that that's what the intelligence estimates say. And so what it did was to create in the minds of the American people, of the listeners, the sense that the intelligence was saying Saddam is going to have a nuclear weapon in 1 to 2 years. In fact, what the intelligence community was really saying was Saddam is going to have a nuclear weapon in 4 to 7 years.
You advocated the invasion of Iraq, and to be fair, you raised some doubts about it, about the timing, about the diplomatic approach that the administration was going to take. But considering what we've learned now, in your mind, was the war justified?
Unfortunately, I can't give you an easy answer. It is certainly the case that the case for war that I made was weaker, now I recognize, than I believed at the time. But that said, the case for war was about more than just weapons of mass destruction. Different people came to it from different perspectives. For me, the human rights argument was a very important one, although I recognize that for many of the readers of my book, it wouldn't necessarily be so. There were other arguments as well. Saddam Hussein, with or without his weapons of mass destruction, was a tremendous destabilizing force in the Middle East. He was an adversary of the United States. He was looking to overturn the status quo in a terribly fragile and economically irreplaceable part of the world. That made him a threat to the United States as well. In addition, this was a man who was ultimately trying to acquire weapons of mass destruction, and it would have been much further down the road, it would have taken much longer than we believe, but he ultimately was headed in that direction. And you can raise other points to be made. So I don't think that the case for war is clear-cut. I never thought it was clear-cut. Before the war, I didn't think it was clear-cut. I thought there was a preponderance of evidence. Now, I believe that the evidence was considerably weaker than I believed it to be, because I now recognize that the WMD argument was much weaker than I believed at the time. But I really don't think that you can simply say, well, the WMD argument was weaker, therefore there was no case for war.
Kenneth Pollack, he's the director of research at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. His article, Spies, Lies, and Weapons, What Went Wrong, appears in the current issue of the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Leanne, for having me.
To hear an extended version of the interview with Kenneth Pollack, you can visit our website at npr.org.